day, Tamu Pōtaka is with us. Tamu, of course, the Minister of Conservation and Associate Housing Minister, Minister of Māori Development likewise. Thank you for joining us on the program again, Tamu. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe, hoa, and thank you for having me at this hour. I just went to the gym and back, had breakfast, and I'm ready for you.
Yeah, good on you, mate. I know you're a purposeful sort of a guy. Get a good start and looking good. We want to talk a bit about conservation numbers. But
yeah, good call.
With your hat being Māori development, it sort of ties in everything, doesn't it? So free trade agreements, likewise, are going to be Māori development issues. We might get to that if we've got time. You said, let's start with housing, please, because you said that the performance targets linked to reducing emergency housing numbers were an operational matter for the MSD. But as the minister, do you accept any accountability for systems that critics argue may create incentives to decline support for vulnerable families and rough sleepers by MSD?
Well, I am accountable for the emergency housing target, which was to reduce the numbers considerably in emergency housing, which we've done. I'm also responsible for a range of other programs. But in terms of HR and performance issues, and right in the detail of a performance framework or performance management system, that is the operational responsibility of Debbie Powers, the MSD Chief Executive Officer.
Okay, and were you aware of her approaches here, or do you say, well, this is my expectation, I'll leave it to do it?
Well, we're aware that there is a system in place and it's functional. How she operationalises it ultimately is up to her. We're responsible for, or I'm responsible for, that target and making sure that the overall system is working. And there are some people who are doing it very tough out there, Dale, people who are on the street and sleeping rough in cars. And we've really sponsored a few programs such as Housing First, putting on 300 extra spots, most of them in Auckland, and Immediate Access, which you've heard about recently.
Yeah, look, there is some good news here. Looking back at how those, whether or not performance targets were included in the way that the Chief Executive of MSD operated, that's one thing. What I guess most of us are concerned about, Tamu, and no doubt you are too, is that we're assuming many of these people who were in emergency accommodation were our people, and we are concerned, as we should be, for their welfare. What can you say, hand on heart, as to where they have ended up?
Oh, I'm genuinely concerned for the welfare of people who are living in a seriously, severely deprived situation for housing. When we came in, Dale, we knew where 50% of people were going when they exited emergency housing. Now we know where the vast majority are going, between 70 and 80% at any one time. That's a massive improvement on data. But there are still people that are going. We don't know where they're going to, and there could be a range of destinations for them. But importantly, we do have improved data over the last 3 years about exits. That's slightly different to Immediate Access, which has been in the news over the last couple of days. But again, it's a different cohort of people, and we've just started the Immediate Access with Transitional. And for the most part, Dale, if you talk to different providers, they have different takes. Auckland Council, Kawhi Tukaha, the Homelessness Insights Report, all say that the number of people rough sleeping in Auckland has come down considerably in the last 12 months, and that's correlated with these programs that we've supported.
Okay. Your opponents, understandably, were trying to get traction, saying that you've gone backwards, flip-flopped, whatever, on the conservation arrangements. You have decided for a reset and a step back. Just par for the course, is it politically, when legislation is advanced? And how can we be assured that the threat of the commodification or sale of conservation land is going to be lasting?
Well, the most important thing here is that Kiwis and New Zealanders absolutely love nature and the conservation estate. It was never the intention of the Minister, Minister Pōtaka, myself, or the National Party or the government to sell off large swathes of land. People were concerned that we were going to do that, and the proposed bill didn't necessarily match the intent and the perception. Land does come out of conservation estate from time to time. It happened under previous Labor governments. It's happened under national governments, very small pieces of land. And sometimes it comes out through treaty settlements. So you might recall, some of those settlements, some conservation land ended up in iwi hands and control. But the system around disposal was clunky. We wanted to improve it. People were genuinely concerned, and the perception was we were trying to sell off large areas of land, which we're not. That's not the intent, and that's why I've fixed it with cabinet approval to remove those provisions, and we'll work on those provisions and others with ENGOs like EDS and Forest and Bird, iwi, sector groups and others.
Does a list still exist about land that is no longer of use to the department? You mentioned the Met Service building in Wellington and a gravel pit in the West Coast as an example. And you've also touched on the fact that previous governments have sold off small parcels of conservation land and iwi settlements. So is there still a list that exists of potential land to be gotten rid of?
There is no such single list, Dale. There never has been. There have been suggestions that there is, there isn't, that I'm aware of. I've never been advised of one. And what we were intending to do was just clarify the process, ensure clear safeguards for a disposal process that is used from time to time, but not all the time. That did not work for a lot of people. So as a result, we took action. We listened. We heard people. We took action. Now it's in the Select Committee, and it's time to get our submissions in. We've extended, or the Parliament Select Committee has extended the time for submissions. I think they're due by next Monday.
Tēnā koe. How many, with still unresolved iwi settlements, can we assume that at times conservation land is still available to be used as redress for the injustices of yesteryear? And is that decision purely in the hands of the government, or would it be appropriate for, in that settlement negotiation, iwi to say, well, look, you've got that conservation land over there. You can't return what's now private land, understandably, because that's the way the law is, but there's that bit of green pasture over there which might suit our needs. How realistic is it for iwi Māori to negotiate to get some of that land, and do you think there would be a public upheaval if that was the case?
Well, there's a clear pathway around treaty settlement negotiations for land to come out of the conservation estate, and that's why I've said it all along, Dale. Land does come out for treaty settlements and for other reasons, sometimes sold to private interests. That happens. It happened under Labor, it happened under National, and it'll continue to happen, but only on rare occasions. And you, generally, you need legislation to enable that to happen. I know of some situations, Dale, where iwi have agreed with the Crown outside treaty of settlement process to have an exchange and disposal of land, and 35 years later, they're still waiting. Now, that can't be right, Dale, and part of that is because the current provisions are very clunky and they do not enable that.
Yeah, the economic development provisions in the bill, can you reassure us that that's not going to weaken conservation protections or open the door for future governments taking public land in directions that were never originally intended, Tama?
Most important thing for the Act, Dale, is that conservation is the purpose, and everything has to align with the purpose. But we do have economic activity now on the conservation estate, whether or not that's hotels or ski fields or guided walks or other tourism enterprises, a range of initiatives. People doing guided river tours. I have a cousin who waited 10 years to get a concession, waiting for the conservation department to make a decision. Again, that can't be right, Dale, that someone from our own river has to wait 10 years to get a piece of paper from DOC to take tourists down the river. So I think that that's showing that we do need to modernise the system. We do need to make it not only relevant, but also up to date. Now, I can assure people that conservation is the purpose. Economic activity already takes place, and those two things are not mutually exclusive. You can have one with the other, but ultimately conservation is the purpose.
Thank you. I feel obliged to ask our politicians in our news cycle this morning, Tama, about the Chinese situation testing a bomb in the Pacific. It caught people off guard, obviously. Our Minister of Foreign Affairs is aghast, the world media concerned. We have tried to strengthen relationships with the dragon, if I can use that term, for China, over the years. And we've often had a kanohi Māori in our negotiations, trade negotiations, etc. So we see them as a friend, ally, certainly our most significant trading partner. How then do we position ourselves as a country and as a people, Māori, in what seems to be a bit of posturing, political posturing that we're witnessing at the moment?
Well, first, I support the Prime Minister and the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Premier and the Rangatira, Winston, in their statements. It is a bit of a surprise, but generally leave those matters of international and foreign affairs significance to the two senior leaders in this space. I want to make sure that we have support for ongoing economic, cultural and other ties with China, and that's why I've been so enthusiastic about getting Māori into export and collaboration with a range of international interests.
Which brings us to a free trade agreement. So I heard Chris Luxon saying, well, look, we've got this one with India, and the Indian rangatira is heading our way, obviously. Winston don't favour it because it gives some passageways that he didn't think appropriate for immigration settings. Chris Luxon has said, well, look, after this, we're thinking of doing free trade agreements with boom, 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 diddy, boom, 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 about 8-10 different countries, I heard the other day. And he says it's going to be great for our exporters, great for our wine sellers, etc. Now, I understand that it could provide opportunities for Māori exporters, but how many? And for the people of Manurewa, perhaps would mean little. But you're the Minister of Māori Development. How significant are these free trade agreements for our people?
Hugely significant. We've been trading and exporting for nigh on 200 years, Dale, as Māori. Whether or not it was the boats coming out of Waikato into the Onehunga harbour there and dropping things off and picking things up and going to Sydney, or a range of other international export initiatives that our tupuna and ourselves have been involved in. So I'm massively supportive of the free trade agreements, noting, of course, that they also have treaty chapters within the agreements that recognise Te Tiriti o Waitangi and ultimately the aspirations of Māori. We are an export economy, and to grow the wealth and well-being that we need to export products. We're not going to get rich just selling houses to one another, Dale. So you think about some of the huge Māori exporters like Whangarā Farms, who the biggest export of minced meat to McDonald's in New Zealand, or think about other businesses like Emergency Q, which is a business that young Morris Pitter and others are running out of the North Shore to help with triage management in hospitals. Culture Q, people like Rhonda Kite and her offsider Stephen Renata have been invested in that business, helping with movie making and films and TV shows. You know, we have massive exporters in our Māori communities and our iwi communities, and I'm totally behind them. And making sure we have less trade barriers as part of not only building their business, but also the jobs that go with those businesses and the wealth and health well-being that come with it as well.
Thank you for joining us on the program regularly. I appreciate it. Our listeners do. And look forward to our next kōrero, Māori Ora. Thank you. All the best.
Māori Ora. Thank
you. You're 603 Urban Māori Radio.